Speaking today, make sure you speak into the microphone, and if you do take the handheld, speak into that, because we do have people that are listening remotely, and we want to make sure that they're able to hear too. You can go ahead back up, and now we'll continue.
Great, thank you.
And sign the sign-in sheet if you would, please.
Each speaker write this. Yes.
You're all right, Mary, we know who you are.
Okay.
We know you.
Just want to follow the rules.
Give me a hard time.
Good afternoon, everyone. For the record, my name is Mary Schreider Fox of Steen, Whaler, and Schreider Fox, a law firm in Ocean View. And as has been mentioned already, I'm here today on behalf of a coalition of homeowners associations and residential communities that are located in the area surrounding the proposed campsite. The communities that I'm here on behalf of this afternoon represent over 1,100 single-family lots. And the communities are The Retreat at Love Creek, Hart's Landing, Briarwood Estates, but I'll note the one exception concerning the gentleman that spoke in favor of the application. So Briarwood Estates minus one, Webb's Landing, Sandy Bray, Plantations East, Bayfront, and Homes Along Ward Road. Members from all of these communities are here today, and we will be presenting what I hope you will find to be a very organized presentation with certain speakers assigned to different topics to try to make the process more efficient for you today. However, before introducing the speakers from the coalition group and the residents, I want to offer some comments about the pending proposal from a legal perspective. And I'm talking, of course, about the county's comprehensive plan, its conditional use and zoning ordinances, as well as applicable state law. As has already been described today, there are two parts to today's application, a rezoning part and a conditional use part. Beginning first with the rezoning request, the applicant is seeking to rezone a portion of the proposed campground site from GR General Residential to AR1 Agricultural Residential, what is arguably a less intense zoning classification. With that being the case, someone might think, what's wrong with this kind of downzoning, as sometimes it's referred to? What kind of harm is there in that? As a practical matter, there might not be any if the applicant was actually seeking to downzone in order to pursue a permitted use. But again, as the presentation you just heard reveals, that is not the case today. The applicant is seeking a conditional use that requires your special permission. And, of course, the reason for this rezoning is to accommodate and develop a large RV campground, which will eventually be the seasonal, possibly daily, possibly weekly. It sounds like all options are available. Vacation destination for, according to at least the last numbers we saw, 516 RV travelers, as well as campers in tents and some in cabins, 30 tents and 82 cabins for a total of 628 groups of campers of various sorts and sizes. All of this is important and necessarily part of the decision-making process when considering the rezoning part of this application, not just the conditional use part. As the court in Orchard Homeowners Association versus County Council said, the rezoning applicant's proposed use of the property in question is very relevant to the propriety of the rezoning decision. Without a record as to how the applicant plans to use the property, the court is not able to determine whether or not the rezoning decision is acceptable under the comp plan, under the zoning statutes, and under relevant state law. So regardless of what we're talking about here today, whether it's the rezoning part or the conditional use part, it's important to consider the proposed use. And this is, of course, I mention all of this because the proposed use of the property is the source of the primary objections to both the rezoning and conditional use application. Section 6904 of Title 29 of the Delaware Code makes it clear that zoning decisions shall be in accordance with the comprehensive plan and shall be for the purpose of promoting the health, safety, morale, convenience, order, prosperity, and welfare of the present and future inhabitants of Sussex County. Some of the specific things that Section 6904 says must be considered are the lessening of congestion in the streets, protection of the tax base, and securing safety from fire, flood, or other dangers. Section 6904 also goes on to say that reasonable consideration must be given to, among other things, the character of the particular district involved, the conservation of property values and natural resources, and the general and appropriate trend and character of land, building, and population development. And today's application, in our view, is problematic on all of these fronts, beginning first with the comprehensive plan. The future land use element of the county's comp plan states that the future land use element, quote, is probably the most influential part of this comprehensive plan. The county zoning regulations are intended to carry out the future land use plan, end quote. That's on page 3-7 of the future land use element. One part of the future land use plan is, of course, the future land use map, which identifies the land for which the rezoning is sought as being located in an area slated for mixed residential use with an environmentally sensitive developing area overlay. Because the land sought to be rezoned to AR1 is located in a mixed residential area, rezoning the land to AR1 will not be in keeping with the future land use map. State law says that zoning decisions shall be in accordance with the comprehensive plan. There is no exception listed for down zonings to a less intense designation or for a down zoning for the purpose of trying to obtain a conditional use. If the zoning, or in this case rezoning, decision does not correspond with the comprehensive plan, then it must be denied. Section 6904 of Title 29 is not the only statute that tells us that. In Title 9 of the Delaware Code, both sections 6951 and 6959 state that the land use maps forming part of the comprehensive plan have the force of law, and no development shall occur except in conformity with those land use maps. Now, a failure to comply with the maps of the comp plan is not the only problem for this rezoning request. Some of the other requirements I already mentioned that are listed in 6904 also present problems for the applicant. For example, the character of the particular district where this land is located. As you will hear from the coalition members who are going to present soon, much of the surrounding area consists of residential developments of various sorts. The applicant's already mentioned that as well. The proposed campground project is not residential in nature, and rather is a commercial venture designed to attract transient vacationing guests to the area. And that may be fine in some other location, but again, it's not a residential project that will be located in a predominantly residential area. Another problem is presented when considering the promotion of health, safety, morale, convenience, and welfare of the present and future inhabitants of Sussex County. A typical definition of an inhabitant, according to Merriam-Webster's online dictionary, is one that occupies a particular place regularly or routinely. A typical synonym listed by the same source is resident. In this instance, when considering the well-being of the residents in the surrounding area, this application is problematic. As the coalition presenters will tell you shortly, they are concerned about the condition of the existing roads, which are narrow, have sharp turns, and are largely without shoulders. And the idea of them being heavily traveled by this different type of traffic, these large RVs. They are also concerned about their prosperity in terms of their property values and how they might be affected by this kind of commercial venture designed to attract transient guests located in the area. They are also concerned about safety issues, such as the lessening of congestion in the streets and securing the area from fire, flood, or other dangers. In this instance, according to the information submitted by the applicant that's on file with the county, the level of service for Plantation Road, Cedar Grove Road, Postal Lane intersection currently has an unacceptable F rating. I understand from those same materials as well as the presentation here today that there are planned improvements to that intersection, but in the meantime, we know that there is a congestion problem that has an unacceptable rating that will certainly be exacerbated by this different type of traffic. Again, I think it's important to emphasize that this is a different type of traffic when you have such large vehicles. Some will be towing other vehicles, as the applicant stated. Additionally, if the visitors are seasonal, for the first time we heard today that there may be a DART bus that will travel to and from the community, and that's a move in the right direction. However, those that choose not to use the DART bus service that are there seasonally will certainly be going out into the community to shop, to go to the beach, to go to restaurants, and thus the there will be an additional number of travelers on the road that I'm not sure is fully accounted for in the applicant's presentation concerning the traffic and road conditions. There's also a danger presented by having a campground project located so close to so many residential communities, and that campfires will be permitted according to the last draft rules for the campground that I saw on file. Campfires obviously go hand in hand with a campground project. That's part of the experience, but that's also what can make a campground unsuitable for an area that is largely developed with residential homes. If something were to go wrong, if something were to get out of control, it could be quite severe. And I submit that that may be one of the reasons why campground projects are permitted in what can be some of our more remote zoning districts, and that is the AR1 designation, where it may not be so heavily developed. And last but not least, the natural resources on and around the subject property are a great concern to the residents. That's gotten a lot of attention here today. Some of what we heard today is the first time that we've heard it in terms of the recommendations that the developer's consultant is making concerning various natural features of the project. Again, I think that's moving in the right direction, and this council has the difficult task of performing a balancing act, if you will, of determining, you know, whether or not those recommendations will satisfy some of the concerns that DENREC has submitted and some of the positions that were taken by the environmental folks in the PLUS review process. To that, I can only respond by urging the council to give all of that information its appropriate weight. And I can only say I'm glad you get to perform that part of the balancing act and not me. But for all of these reasons that I've just stated, and when taking into consideration these plans for the property, as the Orchard Homeowners Association case tells us to do, we should consider the plans and deny this rezoning request. The same is true for the conditional use part of the application. As the rezoning part of the application has a relationship with the comp plan, so does the conditional use part. As previously mentioned, part of this project is in a mixed residential area on the future land use map, and the other part, for which rezoning is not sought, is located in the low-density area with the environmentally sensitive overlay in both for the entire site. Under all of these designations, residential development is permitted, and non-residential development is either specifically discouraged, as in the mixed residential area, or only certain types are deemed appropriate. According to the future land use element, in low-density areas, business development should be largely confined to businesses addressing the needs of the primary uses of agricultural activities and single-family detached homes. Retail and office uses should focus on providing convenience, goods, and services to the nearby residents. In the environmentally sensitive developing area, a range of housing types are appropriate and permitted, as are retail and office uses, or light commercial or institutional uses that provide convenient services and allow people to work close to home. The pending application does not fit into any of these categories just mentioned. Again, as previously stated, this is not a residential project, as there will, after all, be no residents, and we will have vacationers coming to visit the site. Any goods or services that are being provided within the park are being offered for the convenience of the visitors only, and it will not be open to the public. So again, these aren't services. The project is not a service that fits into the categories of trying to serve the neighboring agricultural properties and or nearby residents. The language of Section 115-171 of your zoning code is also problematic for the comprehensive plan, the conditional use proposal. That section states that conditional uses are to be, quote, essential and desirable for the general convenience and welfare, end quote. And while this project may be good for the convenience and welfare of people from other places coming to visit us, or for the applicant as a commercial venture, We have to ask ourselves what benefit is conferred upon the general convenience and welfare of Sussex County, and more specifically, the surrounding neighborhoods and residents that live close by. Lastly, we must look at the specific requirements set forth in Section 115-172H concerning campgrounds. Needless to say, we take a different view as to how to interpret the various requirements in that subparagraph H. I think it, although it was read earlier, I think it merits reading again. In subparagraph 9 of subparagraph H, it states, quote, all units to be used for the purpose of human habitation shall be tents, travel trailers, recreational vehicles, and equipment manufactured specifically for camping purposes, end quote. Mention was made by the applicant of the cabins that are being proposed. If we carefully read that language and think about it, a cabin does not fit into the category of a tent, of a travel trailer, of a recreational vehicle, or equipment. It is what it is. It's a cabin. And according to your conditional use ordinance, that type of structure for human habitation is not permitted in a campground. That said, there is an exception. And that is one structure or manufactured home within the campground area may be used by the park manager as a residence and or office. So with the exception of any cabin that may be identified for use by the park manager, the cabins should be disallowed under your existing ordinance. It's also important to consider the other requirements in subparagraph H and whether or not they have been specifically met by the proposal. Some of the applicant's proposal seems to have changed since the planning and zoning hearing, and some of it changed, I think, today during this presentation with respect to some of the recommendations that the environmental consultant is making. So it's a little iffy. We're not quite sure how it's going to affect things, but I urge this council to carefully read through those various requirements. For example, one of them is that the site must be from a public highway having a width of at least 50 feet. I think I heard testimony from the applicant's traffic consultant that right now Cedar Grove Road is 21 feet wide. Even with improvements, it didn't sound like it was going to meet the 50-foot requirement of your ordinance. Therefore, we urge you to pay particular attention to that requirement. The buffers, at least according to one viewing of one of the site plans, it appeared that perhaps not all of the 400-foot buffer and 100-foot buffer required by subparagraph H may not have been met for all of the proposed campsites, specifically the cabins. I'm not sure if that remains true since the site plan appears to have changed a bit, and I urge this council to pay close attention to that. The same is true with respect to whether or not all of the individual campsites meet the minimum 2,000 square foot requirement and the minimum width of 40 feet. I heard, I think, someone mention that maybe the tent sites are being eliminated, but I don't know if that is the case. But according to at least one site plan, it appeared that the individual tent sites may not actually meet those minimum requirements. So again, I think it's worth noting, and I urge the council to take a close look at that as well. Lastly, with respect to some of the amenities. In other conditional use situations, recreational space or recreational amenities are specifically provided for in your ordinances, such as in the mobile home park context, which is subparagraph G of section 115-172. The same is true with respect to swimming or tennis clubs. Specific requirements are set out about the type of recreational facility or recreational space you're supposed to have. And another thing that I just urge this council to consider and think about is whether or not this type of proposal that has an outdoor amphitheater, swimming pools, a kayak launch, lots of very attractive recreational facilities for a proposed campground like this, but do they fit within the exact structure of your specific ordinance? In subparagraph H, it specifically does allow for small retail businesses, such as a grocery store or an automatic laundry, that will specifically serve just the visitors of the park. But nothing is listed or provided for with respect to recreational facilities, such as the ones proposed by this developer. And I submit to the council that perhaps this proposal, as well as some others, or one other that I can think of, that another developer proposed recently, they may just be outside the scope of your ordinance and what was not contemplated, a bigger project than the more traditional campground that may have been contemplated by your subparagraph H. It's just something to think about. Needless to say, there's a lot to think about in terms of whether or not this project meets the comprehensive plan, your ordinances that I just reviewed, as well as the state statutes that I mentioned. It is our position that it does not meet those various things and that it should be denied. However, to give you even more to think about, and so that the residents may tell you some of their precise concerns, I would like to ask Mr. Paul Hamisfar. He's the president of the Retreat at Love Creek Homeowners Association, and he is the first coalition member who wishes to present to you today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. As Mary said, my name is Paul Hamisfar. I am the president of the Retreat at Love Creek Homeowners Association. I live on Omwek Lane, which is located in the Retreat. We, the Retreat, are commonly a community of 161 homes, and more than 300 homeowners live in that particular vicinity within a quarter of a mile of the proposed campground. In addition, I was asked to speak on behalf of the coalition of homeowners that was formed by various communities mentioned by Ms. Schreider-Fox. This coalition represents over 1,000 home sites in the surrounding areas of the proposed RV development. On behalf of the coalition, I am here to express the overwhelming opposition to the proposed project by Lingo Asset Managers. As witnessed by those present, and if we could have a show of hands of those people who are opposed, I'd appreciate that, as well as an additional 83 documents which we've received from people who are not able to attend today because of work or because of other reasons, being away on vacation and so forth, that expressed an interest in opposing this particular recommendation. That being said, we should have a count of roughly 190 persons here opposing it, plus the 80. We're talking close to 300 people who would be here in attendance if it were possible. In addition, we've obtained over 800 signatures on petitions, as noted earlier in the meeting. Our coalition of homeowners retained the services of an attorney to ensure that the laws of Delaware in regard to the proposed RV campground were understood. As clearly pointed out by Ms. Schreider-Fox, the following facts were discovered. There is no evidence by the developer to support why this land should be rezoned, other than for the business revenue and their proposed commercial development project. Secondly, the proposed rezoning is inconsistent with the future land use map, especially as the state law requires that all zoning regulations be in accordance with a comprehensive plan. To quote Title IX, Chapter 69, Zoning, no development as defined in this subchapter shall be permitted except in conformity with the land use map or map series and with the county land development regulations enacted to implement the other elements of the adopted comprehensive plan, end quote. This development will not be in keeping with the intent of the Delaware Code to promote health, safety, morale, convenience, order, prosperity, or welfare of the present and future inhabitants and taxpayers of Sussex County. In addition to the legal aspects of why the council should be denying this proposed development, the Coalition of Homeowners has assembled a number of presentations, five in total, that will follow to detail numerous other issues that also support denial of the application of rezoning and conditional use variance. I will introduce each speaker with a brief summary of important points that we made during the presentation. The first issue we will address is roads and traffic. Could you print that? The two speakers who will be presenting this particular aspect of the impact we want to discuss are Mr. Charlie Tanacci and also Mr. Dick Snyder. First of all, common sense tells us why people should choose an RV campground to vacation in this area. It provides easy access to the beach, shopping, restaurants, and other amenities, all of which will require travel to and from the resort area. Secondly, tractor-trailer-sized rigs towing cars on rural roads that have no shoulders in the middle of summer peak traffic hours raise serious safety issues. Thirdly, the developer's traffic impact statement is flawed, first by using the National Mobile Home Statistics as their model for determining traffic flow instead of a resort area model. Secondly, their TIS study only considered traffic flow to and from the east side of the project via Route 1 corridor and ignored the traffic coming from the west. Finally, when estimating the volumes of traffic from RV campgrounds compared to single-family homes that could be built on that site, the developer overestimated the number of homes by nearly threefold. So with that, I would like to bring up Mr. Charlie Tanacci to talk about roads and traffic.
Yes, and also you indicated that there were some letters that you had.
Yes.
Were you going to introduce those in the record? And if so, would you give them to Mr. Lank, please?
Did you sign in, too, please?
Sure.
Good afternoon. My name is Charlie Tanacci. I live at Blair Court in Lewis.
And would you sign in as well, please? I believe there's a sign-in sheet there.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'm opposed to the rezoning and conditional use request for the RV campground development made by the applicant Lingo Asset Management. There are several points made by the applicant regarding the traffic impact of this project that I'd like to challenge. First, they claim that this is a destination area where people will stay on premises their entire time that they're there. Common sense tells us why people come to this area for vacation. It's mainly for the beaches, plus the shopping, plus the restaurants, plus the entertainment. In fact, all of the local campgrounds and RV parks in the area advertise their proximity to the beaches, shopping, Lewis, Rehoboth, and the boardwalk. It will not be for the pool or the amphitheater or the tiki bar in the RV campground, and it will not be Love Creek. As nice as Love Creek is, it cannot provide entertainment for the estimated 2,500 people who may stay in this RV city. And all of this means increased car traffic throughout the day that is not being considered by the traffic impact study for this development. Second, the applicant claimed that there will be no weekly RV traffic. Well, we heard now that there's going to be 20% transient traffic. That's new. The applicant has stated that they intend for this campground to be designed for seasonal rentals. That's sheer speculation on their part. In fact, the more likely scenario is that when they cannot rent all of their sites for the season, they will welcome weekly and daily renters. This will result in increased RV traffic on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays during the worst time of the year in Lewis, when tourists and families from all over the area are coming and going through the town. With hundreds of RVs in this area, I foresee a traffic nightmare where our neighborhood will be inundated with RVs coming to and leaving the campgrounds. Family cars will have to compete for space with tractor-trailer-sized rigs towing cars on rural roads that have no shoulders in the middle of summer peak traffic. This is a recipe for accidents, traffic fatalities, and property damage. And as Paul said, my third challenge is that the traffic impact study is flawed. They did use National Mobile Home Statistics as their model for determining traffic flow instead of a resort area model where there'll be more daily trips throughout the day going to the beach, shops, entertainment facilities, and restaurants. The traffic impact study also focused only on traffic flowing west on Cedar Grove Road toward the development site. But if you use a GPS or any of the mapping sites, traffic from this area will be coming mostly from the north and west, and they will be using Plantation Road, Robinsonville Road, Beaver Dam Road, and Jimtown Road. These are all secondary rural roads that have no shoulders, and they are not in the applicant's plan for improvement. We heard that the developer does plan on improving a small straight section of Cedar Grove Road to the east, and the more dangerous portion of the road will not be improved in any way, exposing the motorists to more hazardous conditions. The final point I'd like to make is that I would like to challenge that the number of homes for this housing development is the same as an RV campground. The applicant has repeatedly stated that an RV campground is no worse than a building development on the same size property using current zoning, but that is simply not true. At the P&Z meeting, the applicant claimed that there would be 515 houses built as part of an equivalent housing development. If you take a look at the chart, and I apologize for the people not being able to see it, the applicant claimed that there would be 515 homes as part of the housing development. But as you can see, if you actually use numbers here, you come out with 311. And 311 would result in significantly less motor vehicle traffic than the 628 RV sites. In fact, it's roughly half. Now, I raise these concerns because the applicant, quite frankly, did not perform a valid yield study. They just said, I have so much land, which comes out to, as your chart shows, but not mine, 162 acres. They divided the number of total acres by the residential requirements for the zoning area and came up with 515. What they forgot to include, however, was all of the infrastructure that's associated with the housing development. They had nothing associated for roads, stormwater management, wetlands. They didn't include Welch's Pond, any open space, and no amenities. It's hard to build on Welch's Pond. If you do consider that, you end up with approximately 68 acres of land that's just earmarked for infrastructure. And these are using the developer's own numbers. These are not designed or come up with by me. If you do that, you end up with 311 homes. That does not compare well with their 515, and it does not compare well with their 628. And that's not even including if areas associated with open space or amenities. This is my numbers. I did throw in approximately 25 acres for amenities and open space. And if you did include that, you end up with a total of 232 homes. Apologize. The applicant's numbers are just not realistic or valid. In summation, my neighbors and I would ask that the council keep the existing zoning and instead encourage the applicant to consider alternate uses and other development options for the land. Thank you for your consideration in rejecting this proposed development and rezoning the conditional use.
Hi, I'm Dick Snyder. My pleasure to speak to you folks today. I also live in the retreat Love Creek on Bernard Drive, and I've got a bit of a multimedia presentation here for your enjoyment today, which hopefully will break it up a little bit. Let me start out with the small, these things here. Needless to say, we don't have the resources of the applicant to do some of these things, so there may be a little bit of an eye strain. Hopefully, the copies I sent around to you folks will help. But the message that, you know, I wanted to amplify on some of the things that Mr. Tanacci just talked about by looking at existing nearby RV sites and access to those RV sites as compared to what would be anticipated to this site. So the first one that's shown is the Big Oak site, which is, if I can do this, Paul, without zapping you. This is Route 1 here. There's a Wawa right here for those of you that frequent Route 1. This is Wolf Neck Road here, and that's a quarter of a mile to this site, mm-hmm. which is back here. No turns, straight shot, quarter of a mile. In fact, it's interesting. The only way you can get to this site, you have to be going north on Route 1, which means that when you leave the site, you also have to go north on Route 1, and they can't turn on left on 24 unless they, you know, upset a few people. So it is a very controlled access, if you will, and very limited access to that site. So if you show the next one, please. The next one is, and it may not be in the order that I have with you folks, I apologize for that, but they're all in there. This is Steamboat Landing, which is up, I think it's actually officially Lincoln. But in any event, again, you can see this is Route 1, and here's Steamboat Road right here. Straight shot, right to the facility. Virtually nothing else is here. And these pictures are from Google Maps, which means they're about 2 years old. So this is not atypical for some of the sites that I've actually visited to see. They're fairly isolated, and access in and out is very controlled and very simple. And the next one is Jellystone, which is a little farther north. Tilt that one, Paul, this way. Landscape view. There you go. Here again, you have Route 1, and here's the access road. Very short distance. I'm sure that's even less than a quarter of a mile. No turns, no twists, no nothing. Very simple, and you're there. And again, you can see the surrounding area is pretty private. And then the last one is Holly Lake Resort off of Route 24. Whoops. And again, I'll do my best. Here's Route 24 right here. Route 5 is just down here to get your, well, maybe a little bit farther. And there's a very short distance here before you reach the exit or the entrance to the park. There are some sites back here that would require you to drive down this road and then back up again to get there. But again, even that road is not shared for any other purposes for the most part. Okay. Then the next, the fancy map that I got from the P&Z guys, by the way, thank you for that.
P&Z guy.
Yeah. This, and you'll see this in a probably a better version later, so I'll try not to be repetitive, but just to get your bearings again, there's a lot of colors on here, which is always helpful for guys like me. This is roughly the proposed site right here. It's not all in yellow because they only showed the portion that's GR today that has to be rezoned. And so, again, to get your bearings, Plantation is up here. Here's 24. This is Mulberry Knoll here, which I'll talk about again in a minute. And then this is Cedar Grove, which winds around here and goes past my development. And over here is Robinsonville Road. And here's one of the points I want to make on this, because I travel all these roads on a regular basis, and I'm fairly observant, and I see what other people are doing. And part of the message here is, first of all, the proposed site is right in the epicenter of a lot of stuff. The attorney for the applicant points out, rightly so, and his number is probably low, that there are a lot of residential developments that have not yet been started, that have been approved, that are probably less than a one-mile radius from where we're talking. If you extend that radius out to 3 miles, which is not out of the question, and I did, unfortunately, I couldn't make a map that big and still be able to read it, you would find a lot more of these kinds of things. Places like the Ridings on Beaver Dam, places like Heron Bay on Beaver Dam. There's a bunch of stuff that's planned for Route 24 that is absolutely huge, and a number of other places that you'll see in a minute. My whole point is this. What I see happening is that because of the 5 points problem that I hope we're all familiar with, I mean, that's an intersection you want to avoid even in good times. And people very quickly learn to do that. And what they're doing is they're coming off of 9, they're coming down Dairy Farm Road, and then they're either cutting across on Jimtown or Kendale, and then they cut across Cedar Grove. And these are not RV people. I mean, these are residents, okay, or prospective residents. And what they've learned is, and the same thing I've learned, is that the way that you avoid that mess and the way to get down to points on Route 1 that you want to get to that are down here, there's roughly a straight shot like this, and it goes down Cedar Grove to Plantation, and then you have a choice. You can either keep going. Now, that'll get a lot better in another 2 years. At least that's what the plan says, right? And that's another concern that I'm going to mention in a minute. So the point is, to reiterate what was said before only briefly, is that while the traffic impact study did not take into account any traffic coming to the site from this neck of the woods, shall we say, over here, it assumed that it was all coming from either down Cedar Knoll or, I guess, off 24 across Mulberry Knoll, which is even worse, in my opinion. And when you do that, what that takes out of the equation is this mess that I was just describing that's evolving. You know, and I'm one of the graying population people, as I guess a few of you are also in that same population group, that really don't have the same kind of traffic pattern as the traditional traffic patterns that are used to do. You know, the busy hour is changing, is my message. The busy hour is changing. You know, we don't have to get to work at 8 o'clock. We don't come back home at 5 o'clock. We come and go at all hours of the day, and therefore my concern is that the more traditional measures of traffic, especially in these areas that are filled with more and more people like me, it doesn't really tell the whole story. Now, for your viewing entertainment, where's that young man? There he is. Well, relatively speaking.
What did I miss?
Sorry, but no, that was not a slur.
Say he was a relative.
There's a short video that just to you know, for those of you, you've heard about the kinds of roads, and I thought, you know, what happened was I got a new camera, and you know, I really wanted to use it, so I went out and took some pictures of access along Cedar Knoll. Now. Mulberry Knoll, Cedar Grove. Keep me honest. Go ahead.
Came apart. Oh, you just want this. You just want this.
Okay. Okay, so now this is heading east on Cedar Grove. Approaching coastal towing.
Is that the road that's going to be
done? That no, it's not. That's the whole point. This part, at least at the moment, there's no plans to do anything with it.
Does anybody have any Dramamine?
Sorry,
I need Dramamine. I'm
You know, Mr. Cole, I tried my best to hold my camera still.
Yeah.
And of course, I was not texting and driving. I was but you can see it is, you know, it's no great surprise. It's a traditional rural road. There is a dangerous S-curve there, and I don't overemphasize it. It is there, and that's why we just passed Ward Road, and that's why people of Ward Road were so unhappy. You didn't want to have access at that particular place, and there's the coastal place, and now we're heading.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Now it may look familiar to you. Now we're heading up to where the new entrance is proposed to be, and I think it probably doesn't go much further than that. And of course, this road will now be, instead of a 10.5 foot travel lane, it'll be 11, and there'll be a five foot shoulder on the side. It's nice to know that it will now be accessible, or would now be accessible, more safely for people on bikes. I travel this road all the time, and I'm forever having to pull around bike traffic. The sad state of affairs is that it basically goes nowhere. I mean, once you get to the end of Cedar Knoll and you get to Plantation, you know, that's it. So what do you... Did I say it wrong again? You know what I mean. So now, but there's a more problematic area that was not... It was written off in the TIS, and that's the intersection of Route 24 and Mulberry Knoll. Okay. The reason it was written off is because a signal warrant study has recently been done there by DelDOT at the request of the residents, and their traffic measurement said that it did not warrant a signal. And I don't know how old that is. It's probably only a year old or something like that. And so consequently, it is not considered. You can go ahead. It is not considered in the TIS, as written out of the TIS as a point of intersection to be concerned. Now, here you are on Route 24 going north. Well, all right, west.
North is on your right.
It's a tough crowd.
East.
It's not going east, I know that. It's going
west.
Okay? And up here, if I can do this right, here's Mulberry Knoll coming in over here, okay? All right, now, you'll see at the moment, there's a right turn lane right here. Whoops. Right here. And it's extremely short, number one, and extremely narrow, number two, and it's got these little things on it to define it right here. And I managed to make that turn without hurting anybody. But, you know, so, I mean, that's clearly problematic, in my opinion, for a huge vehicle coming in from that direction. I don't know how much further down we go on the road. I also looked at it coming the other way, and I don't know if we have that on the video or not, but if you're coming the other way now going east on 24 and you approach that intersection, same problem. You've got a very short, very narrow right turn lane going right on Mulberry Knoll down toward the bay, but there's nothing there for people that are turning. Okay, here's this was a probably not fortuitous for the guy that had the accident, but I was driving down this road, and as I came to the intersection here at Mulberry Knoll and Cedar Grove, I found it, and I'm not good enough to get this staged. This was real. This really happened. I don't know. For the life of me, I can't figure out exactly what happened here, how that person got turned upside down on these roads. And this was at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a sunny day.
No shoulder.
Okay, so and that's it. Thank you. I guess to put that fancy color one up again. Our argument is that, especially with, you know, the RV people that I do know, and a lot of my best friends are RV people, who talk about 5 miles per gallon, and at $5 a gallon, unfortunately, that we're sadly approaching. They are going to take the shortest route possible to get to point B, you know, from point A to point B. And while it may be you know, it may make sense to always come down Route 1 and always come up this way and so forth and so on. Once you find out that you've got access from the west coming in through these roads, I got to tell you, those roads are going to come into play. They cannot be taken out of the equation in the consideration of where this site is. My closing remarks, because I don't want to be redundant, I got a speaker following me that's going to hit this point pretty well, is that I, as a resident and one of your constituents, am concerned about the fact that, one, the comprehensive plan was devised in, what, 2008, so it's 5 years old. Maybe there have been updates in the meantime, I'm not sure. There's a lot of growth that's been going on in our neck of the woods, however you want to define that, primarily in Ms. Deaver's district, mm-hmm. and to a large extent also Mr. Cole's. And a lot of that growth has been without the benefit of a certified county planner. And I am really concerned that as these projects that you see here, which are now approved, maybe they'll get built, maybe they won't. I don't want to roll the dice. What is the lead lag time on an infrastructure project? 5-6 years? Probably. How long has that Postal Lane intersection been talked about? 5-6 years? I don't know. But the point is that, and I know, you know, it's just human nature that infrastructure follows other developments. But I'm really concerned that when you take that 50,000-foot look and you see the dots that are on the map of these developments that are being planned for what is a very desirable part of our county, and you look at the road infrastructure that's there, then we're heading for a real problem. And when you plunk right down in the middle of that, the proposed RV park that we're talking about here with oversized vehicles coming and going at all hours of the day, we've got a perfect storm on our hands. So anyway, you know, you're right. It's not a popularity contest. You know, if it were, we wouldn't be having this meeting. We'd take a vote and it'd be over. But I think you'll see that we're presenting some reasonably well thought out and well researched facts that give us a real pause for concern about what's proposed here. So I appreciate your time. Thank you.
One quick question. You don't have any opposition to it's zoned AR1, which permits, you know, certain amount of development in these zones. You don't have any problem with the way it's currently developed? I mean, currently zoned and could be
the so-called by right zoning, as they refer
right.
to it.
You don't have any problem with that parcel being developed as a single family.
No, I mean,
owned.
I still have the same environmental concerns, and I would want people to pay. I'm not an expert mm-hmm. in that area. Mm-hmm. But again, if things like that evolve over, you know, a period of time that give you the opportunity to have the infrastructure catch up with it, you know, you're not going to put in 300 or 200 or whatever the number is houses in 2 years. You know, that's going to take place over a period of, depending on the economy, 5 or 6 years. So you've got some time to react to those kinds of things. Okay. What we're proposing, hearing being proposed here, is a much shorter lead time than that. Okay? Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thanks.
You want to sign in also?
Oh, yeah.
The next area that we'd like to discuss is other infrastructure and safety impacts. Mr. Jim Schneider will be talking to that. And to summarize again, a couple of the points that he will be making. Over the last 10 years in Sussex County, there has been a 15% increase